Does he take your pictures?
Is your husband involved?
What does he even do?
Welcome to the Instagram Husband Podcast.
Welcome back to the Influencer Husband Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Joseph Ramirez, or at Influencer Husband on Instagram. My wife is at Danny Austin on the internet. If you want to see more behind the scenes of the influencer world, then be sure to follow either of us. We try to be as real and transparent about our lives as possible for you all. But this is the podcast where we come together to talk about all things influencer, the good, the bad, the ugly. We talk about the industry at large. We talk about what it means to have influence. We talk about the impact influencers have on culture, both pop culture and internet culture. And of course, we share tips and tricks on how to be a better content creator. Ultimately, what you're going to get out of this podcast is how the influencer industry is affecting anyone from a chief marketing officer of a Fortune 500 company to a husband, like myself, having to juggle marriage with his wife's influencer career. And by speaking with empathy, we try and make a better internet. But as always, I like to say that this podcast is an open conversation where I would love your feedback too. So if you have an idea for an episode or just generally like the show, then do me a favor, open up iTunes or your Apple Podcast app, navigate to the Influencer Husband Podcast, leave a rating and a comment with all of your ideas, feedback, improvements, etc. I do read every single one of those comments, and I do appreciate you taking the time to leave them. So I'm sure if you're a longtime listener, and by longtime I mean, of course, the past 3 weeks here, then you'll realize that some of the episodes I record are a little bit more practical in nature. They include tips and tricks, and then some are going to be more investigative in nature and more based on commentary, analyzing the industry at large. And then you have some like today's, and some are a little more, let's say, deep. They are more focused on kind of the mission and motive behind influencers. And I like to sprinkle these in, and I like to record these because I think that they're a shot to the heart of the influencer industry. And I do believe that influence and having influence is not just a career path, but it's actually a responsibility. I really do believe that. And I think that influence can be used for good or for evil. And my goal is to create a discussion that motivates influencers toward the former rather than the latter. The other reason I like to record these, you know, shot to the heart episodes is that they discuss the emotional or mental state side of being an influencer. And I would say that those two sides are probably the most challenging part of being in this industry, both your mental state and your emotional health. And the strains of blurring your private life and publicizing every moment of your private life every single day, I think has to be discussed in an open and transparent way in order for influencers to find the healthy way to do it. So anyway, this week's episode is going to be more tailored for content creators instead of content consumers, but I think that everyone should be listening to acquire kind of a greater degree of empathy for both sides of the ticket, if you will. So I want to start this week with the story that kind of inspired this episode. It happened this past weekend. This past weekend, Dan and I attended ACL in Austin, Texas. And if you don't know what ACL is, it's actually short for Austin City Limits. It's probably one of the top five music festivals in the country, led only by, say, Coachella, Lollapalooza, and Stagecoach. It happens every year in October. It's freaking hot, but it's awesome. It's actually especially special to Danny and I because we both are University of Texas at Austin alumni, Hook'em Horns, and spent college going to the festival every year together. So this past weekend, we were invited by SiriusXM to come back to Austin for the festival. So when we boarded the plane, we sat next to this gentleman, and he was probably, I would say, early to mid-40s. And when we sat down, he kind of leaned over to us casually, and he asked if we were heading to Austin for ACL. And I said, yeah, we are. And then he leaned in a little closer and he said, "You all going to see Guns N' Roses?" I said, no, We're probably a little bit more mainstream. Cardi B, Lizzo, I think Danny said. He was like, oh man, you got to see Guns N' Roses. My buddy says they rock out. And he went on to tell us that he was meeting his wife in Austin for the festival. He worked in private equity real estate in Dallas. He has two kids, one who actually attends UT Austin as well. And in our minds, he didn't really meet the demographic that we would assume for ACL. He wasn't in skinny jeans or fringe denim. He looked more like a golfer, but you know, he was for sure very excited to be attending the festival this week. And I think that that's the both the beauty and the power of ACL in Austin. It's kind of this unique experience that is tailored to people from all different walks of life, right? You know, you can find middle schoolers there to see their favorite DJs. You can find parents there with their kids to see Kacey Musgraves. You can find the hip kids to see their favorite indie bands on the smaller stages. And then, of course, you can find everyone else like Danny and I there to see Lizzo and Cardi B because we are just very mainstream now. But ACL is this experience where, you know, fans aren't able to connect just with one of their favorite artists or performers, but multiple at the same time in the same place. You know, when we were in the crowd, I saw a number of attendees kind of frantically trying to put together their schedule like a jigsaw puzzle so they could see everyone they wanted to see. I heard this, he was probably middle school, high school. You know, he was like, I have to see the band Joseph at 6, but I have to be front row at Lizzo right after, you know. And I think that that's, ACL was just this experience of curated performances for the benefit, entertainment, and inspiration of the audience, right? And the reason I tell this story, and I think what inspired the episode today, is that I think that in a lot of ways, ACL and Instagram really aren't that different, actually. Now, hold on. That's probably confusing. Now, follow my logic here for a second, because it's the basis of my whole argument here. So while ACL or Austin City Limits curates your favorite artists into one place, you know, Instagram is a platform that curates your favorite influencers into one place, right? And the excitement of both is within that curation of all entertainment value relevant to the audience in one single place. It's not the Cardi B Festival. It's not the Guns N' Roses Festival. It's not the Lizzo Festival. It's the Austin City Limits Music Festival. And you know, ACL is kind of fun because of this culmination of artists that complement each other and the many different personalities, acts, genres, generations, and performances that all happen under one roof in one place. And my whole point here is that if you replace artists with influencers, it kind of sounds a lot like what Instagram does, doesn't it? You know, I want to focus on this parallel for a second. This episode might be a stretch, but I want to focus on it. So let me tell you why I was inspired to draw this parallel between a music festival and Instagram and why it's kind of central to my argument on this week's episode. So I think that there's this phrase that is thrown around a lot in the influencer industry, nearly all the time, right? And that phrase is collaboration over competition. And it's a nice sentiment. And I think that while it's a nice sentiment, I think that putting it into practice is actually quite difficult for most influencers out there to do. And, you know, I need to confess on my own behalf here that I have quite frequently tried to coax Danny into having a tighter competitive grip on her place in the industry. And, you know, it's easy to kind of explain the difference between my philosophy and why I wanted that and Danny's philosophy by kind of imagining the difference between a closed fist and an open hand, right? Or a closed fist and an open fist, right? And, you know, when it came to my philosophy, every secret trick we had in the industry, every way of growing, I really wanted to hold on to it tightly. You know, I wanted to be the best, and I wanted to compete with everyone, and I wanted to say, like, here's our moat, and we've got to build a moat around us. And, you know, Danny, on the other hand, would freely share all of our knowledge or tips or secrets with other smaller bloggers. And I'd get so frustrated. I'd just be like, what are you doing? Like, this is our career, this is our livelihood. Why are you doing this? And, you know, I saw the success of others as a failure of us. And Dani didn't. You know, she believed that our success didn't have to take away or really have anything at all to do with another's success at all. I saw resources, i.e. partnerships, opportunities, et cetera, as kind of this finite resource. And Dani saw the industry as, you know, plentiful. You know, there's more than enough to go around. And while my heart was positioned, you know, more competitively, Dani's was aimed at collaboration. So in the saying collaboration over competition, Dani believed that, and I just really didn't. And, you know, obviously this was a lesson that I had to learn very early in my career, and I'm glad that I learned it early on instead of, you know, later. And I give all the credit to Dani for really kind of refining that wrong philosophy out of me. But, you know, if I hadn't done that, I think it would have really started to creep in and affect a lot of different areas in my life. And in retrospect, I actually think that my competition over collaboration mindset weakened a lot of my chances at success in past industries and jobs I had worked in the past. It took me about 8 months working alongside Dani to really understand the true benefits of her philosophy, collaboration over competition, to maybe not the career, but to the soul. And even in me recording this podcast where I'm speaking openly every week about how to be successful in this industry, I think that that's a testimony to the way that my heart has changed on the subject of collaboration over competition. But that's not to say that it wasn't extremely difficult for me to get through that. And that's not to denote how difficult it is for other influencers out there in this space to grasp as well. So the competitive nature of some influencers out there, I think, is a very real and toxic poison, both for themselves and the industry at large, right? And I wanted to devote an entire episode to talking about this idea of collaboration over competition. I don't want to just talk about it. I want to give tips on how to see it, believe it, practice it, do it, live it. But first, let me talk about one lie that is really easy for influencers to believe. And, you know, this is that lie that says when you are an influencer, everything should be viewed in a one-to-one lens, meaning that for every one follower for someone else means one less follower for me. For every one brand partnership for another influencer means one less partnership for me. Or for every one like for someone else means one less like for me. So I would say that if we were talking about a government contract or a PR ad agency pitching for a new client, then the whole one-to-one lens is probably pretty factual, meaning that typically, a client is only looking for one supplier in those scenarios, and it's up to said supplier to be the best in order to win the business. It's a one-to-one relationship. In those other very specific circumstances, one-to-one is accurate and is true. But what I would tell you is that this one-to-one relationship in the influencer industry, in our industry, is a complete and utter lie. And let me back that up. So according to a survey done by Statista, I think it was a loose survey, the average user follows between 150 and 200 different accounts on Instagram. The industry spend on influencers is set to hit $10 billion by 2020, which, you know, unless someone is about to become a billionaire overnight from being an influencer, means that that $10 billion is going to be allocated across hundreds of thousands of different influencers, not just one. And, you know, Instagram is even thinking about hiding total like count anyway. And if you want to hear more about that, shameless plug, see the episode 2 weeks ago I said called 5 Reasons Mark Zuckerberg Doesn't Like Me. I talk all about the like count and, you know, what it could mean for your career. But, you know, my point is that this is a very, very, very much not a one-to-one type of industry. The influencer industry is an economy, and there are plenty of resources to fuel it and provide for literally everyone within it. But this one-to-one lie is prevalent in many hearts and minds of influencers, myself at one time included. And here's kind of how the lie manifests itself, right? Influencer logs onto Instagram. Influencer sees how many followers someone else has. Lie says they have more followers than you because they're better than you. So you start believing that and you say, well, I should hate them, or at a minimum, I should feel jealousy towards them because they have more followers than me. Then an influencer posts a picture, gets 3,000 likes, and as that same influencer is scrolling and sees influencer B, pretty much the same picture, has 3,500 likes in a very similar composition. So the lie tempts you to believe, you know, hey, they're my enemy now and they're stealing my shine. So the influencer, you know, scrolls through social media and again sees that influencer B just bought a new home or received a new car, and the lie creeps in again and says, well, this is a one-to-one industry. They are doing better than me because they're brooking more brand deals and therefore they're taking my business away. So I'm going to close myself off from them. I'm going to hide all my secrets. I'm not going to collaborate. I'm going to project evil motives onto them, etc., right? And the fabrication of these mental fibs that we tell each other because we believe it's a one-to-one industry truly keeps us away from collaboration over competition. Meanwhile, the average social media user is just wanting to log into their virtual music festival and see all of their favorite people in one place. But we've got to build these moats and we've got to pretend like, you know, we're friends here and then not actually be, you know, supportive of one another. And we stop realizing the reality that each influencer is really just a different ingredient in, you know, for the sake of the metaphor, a pizza or a pie. And the average social media consumer just loves to enjoy the pizza or the pie, the making up of all these different ingredients coming together, them logging onto their Instagram profile and getting value from each of these different ingredients. A lot of influencers start to believe that they are the pie or they are the pizza. And I'm going to get into why that's dangerous in a second, but this fallacy is like the showrunner for HBO's Big Little Lies being upset or offended that one of their viewers had the nerve to watch a rerun of Friends on Netflix. Or better yet, for the example of ACL and my comparison, you know, it would be like Cardi B at ACL saying to an audience member, I cannot believe you had the audacity to see Guns N' Roses before my performance. Which, you know, honestly, I could see Cardi B saying that, but not for any logical reason. Because neither of those scenarios would be logical at all. You know, the viewer just has different forms of entertainment based on preference, value they receive from the content, mood, time of day, and a plethora of other factors. And I think that us as influencers are really no different. We are a slice of our followers' apple pie, along with other influencers that are other slices that make up the whole value that they receive from a given social media platform. I believe that the sooner that we can kind of realize this as an influencer industry, the better, because the longer that you're out for attention domination, we'll call it, meaning I am the pie, I'm everything, I want it all, I want all the whole festival just to pay attention to me, I think you are A, setting your expectations up for complete failure, and B, I think you're fostering an unnecessary competitive spirit in the process. You know, be the influencer that you are, focus on the value that you uniquely provide, be yourself, share the stage with others, stay in your lane, and you will be a happy, whole, and successful influencer in the process of it all. Now, a lot of that, the collaboration over competition mindset, is a total 180 from what we are raised and grown and nurtured to believe. You know, it's a dog-eat-dog world out there. You know, the boomer generation probably would have told us, you know, you have to be the best to be on top. You know, there's a lot of other sayings that I think resonate that we were sort of conditioned to believe when it came to competition in not just the influencer industry, but in any industry within the economy. And a lot of this is going to be this collaboration over competition mindset is going to be a complete mentality shift. And I think for some, it's going to take, like me, months to reprogram your brains into seeing your life and your career under this new lens. And I don't think one podcast is going to put you on the mountaintop of epiphany. But what I can do is I can give you a couple steps to maybe get there. So what I'm going to do in this episode is go through five simple practices or steps you can take to truly start practicing the collaboration over competition mindset on your way to a healthier and happier career, life, set of relationships, marriage, etc. So step number one, we're climbing up the mountaintop together here. Step number one, turn your gaze outward. Okay, so let's be realistic about this lifestyle for just a second. This lifestyle of being an influencer or content creator. Your job is to make your life interesting and attractive every single day. You film videos about yourself, you post pictures of yourself, you write captions about yourself, you share commentary about yourself. You aren't successful in this industry without a certain degree of self-absorption. You don't have to be self-absorbed as a person, but you need to at least know how to flip the switch on and off at least. So I'm going to save the discussion around healthy versus unhealthy self-absorption in this industry for a different episode, but for now, let's just call a spade a spade. You spend at least 90% of your day, at least your 9-to-5 day, as an influencer with me, myself, and I. This has a weird way of trapping you in your own little world where you focus on the needs of you and you alone. And when you think about what you have and don't have all day, you're, in my opinion, on the fast track to unhappiness. So the best first step out of toxic competition, I think, is to regain the perspective back that starts with thinking about yourself less. Just stop thinking about yourself so much. I remember a couple months back when Apple launched their screen time tracker, and I started kind of watching my patterns over the first couple weeks that was out, and I saw that sometimes I would spend upward of 2 to 3 hours on social media or just on my phone in general. And, you know, my thought is that influencers, you know, are maybe in the upper bracket of being absorbed on their phone as well. And I think it usually is in one of two modes. Either they're posting content about themselves, or two, they're consuming content from others to find more inspiration to post about themselves. And I'm not knocking this at all. I mean, this is part of the lifestyle, part of the job. This is the job. And I do believe that it is necessary to stay updated with the internet. You know, I'm also not going to be unrealistic and tell you to post a picture and then not care. I'm more so just trying to call out some of the dangers and the things that we should be careful of when in the influencer industry. So I'm more so protecting from the extremes here, because it's always about boundaries, people. So what my suggestion is, let's use the time outside of posting to turn our gaze outward instead of remaining stagnant with our gaze inward. My recommendation per this sentiment of most of the episodes that I record is to make it about your followers. I mean, they are the number one priority. You should see it as a service towards them. These are constant phrases that I keep saying and I will continue to say. So you can use that time that you would have spent just consuming and competing, answering DMs to all of your followers, which I understand some influencers legit, I think, need hours to manage that inbox, but you could use that time at lunch with your assistant or investing time into your team at HQ. You could use it in circumstances just to get away from social media altogether. Volunteer at a church or a shelter or a cause you're passionate about. Now, I think that a lot of you are probably thinking in your head, this is so unrealistic. Oh my gosh, how am I supposed to be successful if I don't focus on being successful 24/7? And that also is one of the lies of the industry and of success. And I respect that. And I do agree that early on in your career does require a significant amount of hustle, but there's a difference between working harder and working smarter. And a lot of it has to do with perspective. And you can't have perspective if you don't have a break from what you're focusing all of your time, energy, and attention on. So, for example, this always comes up in my Business Insider RSS feed. Thomas Corley spent 5 years studying millionaires for his book, Change Your Habits, Change Your Life, and found that 72% of all millionaires volunteered 5 hours or more every month. And I don't think it's a coincidence. I think that there's something psychologically and even from a productivity standpoint beneficial from taking a break from what you're doing. So my first step for you all is to turn your gaze outward and make your inward self much healthier, insightful, more innovative, and valuable to your audience. So let's call that the foundation. So you take that step. Now, step number two, collaboration over competition. How do you get there? Step number two, practice daily gratitude. So earlier in this episode, I referenced how the lie of competition manifests itself. It usually starts with the seed of what you don't have, i.e. the same number of followers as someone or the same number of likes that they get, you know, an appearance, if you will, of less material possession in some form or fashion, whether that's digital or actual material like cars and houses and stuff like that. There's this quote by Charles Dickens that says, "Reflect on your present blessings, on which every man has many, not on your past misfortunes, of which all men have some." Reflect on your present blessings, on which every man has many, not on your past misfortunes, of which all men have some. I think that inherently the internet, and especially social media, kind of gives us this access to new worlds and lives that are supposed to amplify our aspirations. Oh my gosh, look at their life. I could have that too. You know, it's supposed to motivate us. But I think instead, most of the time, it ends up depressing us with this inventory of what we don't have. So our focus can easily become consumed with what we don't have and just completely ignore all the wonderful things that we do have. So what I can say with absolute certainty, and I repeat this all the time, is that if you are feeling like you do not have something, and you feel an emptiness inside of you, I am telling you right now that no dollar figure, possession, number of followers is ever going to rid you of this feeling. So trust me, Danny and I have both tried this before having our own individual epiphanies. And what we can say is that there's never, quote, enough, because you will always want, quote, more. In fact, two psychologists, Dr. Robert A. Emmons of the University of California, Davis, and Dr. Michael E. Makula of the University of Miami have done much of the research on gratitude. And what they define as gratitude is, quote, the way for people to appreciate what they have instead of always reaching for something new in the hopes it will make them happier, or thinking they can't feel satisfied until every physical and material need is met. Tell me that Instagram, and especially being a content creator on Instagram and feeling competitive with all these people, would not trigger that every single day. The opposite of gratitude. It's just such a challenge as a content creator to approach things without competition in that sense. But they discuss how gratitude is not something that appears one day. It's not going to just fall out of the sky and one day you're going to wake up and you're 40 and you say, oh my gosh, I'm 40. I have gratitude now. Gratitude is a lot like this muscle, and it can only grow like a muscle, or it can retract at any given moment. And it's something that needs to be exercised and nurtured. And according to them, there are many different ways to practice gratitude. I feel Like the most popular way to start is what they suggest as keeping a gratitude journal. So making it a habit to write down or share with a loved one thoughts about the gifts you received that day, you know, from physical provision to a roof over your head to making your mortgage payment, whatever it can be. Small, simple things typically are better. And then what I've started doing as another way is writing thank you notes this year. Just something about the practice of writing a thank you note to someone else is not just incredibly rewarding for me, because it helps me keep and maintain the perspective that I actually deserve nothing, but I was given this opportunity by someone else and I want to thank them for it, but it also just benefits them. You know, it's going to make their day better. If you really have a trouble, you know, focusing on ways to find peace to even think about gratitude, there's a couple different apps out there. I think the most popular one's called Calm, and I think they have like gratitude exercises on there. But I would just suggest as step number two, once you've laid your foundation, really start working that muscle of gratitude, because I truly believe, and I've seen it this year from us, it will change your life. So step number three, we're still on our road to collaboration over competition. We're trying to clean up influencers' hearts and the industry that they represent. Step number three is to chase the next step and not the whole vision. This is probably my favorite one. This is a big learning lesson for me. So let me go back a little bit. I remember, you know, the time is I just graduated college, right? And as I mentioned in before episodes, I wanted to kind of be the next Mark Zuckerberg. And I would have these massive momentum swings, right? One moment I would be so inspired and filled with passion from the companies and the products we were developing at the time. And then I would just read one TechCrunch article about one of the big Silicon Valley tech giants who had just raised a fresh 50 mil in capital, and it just put me into a pit of despair. And I would just swing from passion of staying in my own lane and creating something I was excited about to just pit of despair when I started comparing myself to some of these other tech giants and saying to myself, oh my gosh, I'll never get there. And I feel like this cycle was on repeat for years, and it really affected the value that I even put on myself. It created these make-believe enemies that I was actually just really jealous of. It even caused me to leave positions to try and take shortcuts to get to the top, or over-leverage people in order to get, you know, to places that I thought I wanted to be or titles that I wanted to have. And, you know, ultimately what I wasn't realizing is the important role time plays in success and gaining experience. We're just completely overlooking time. You know, success just takes a really, really long time. The problem is that in the media and the way publicity works is, you know, they're only going to put those who are on top, you know, at the forefront of our minds. Like, you know, they're not going to talk about some small startup that started 8 months ago. They're going to talk about Amazon that's been around since 1995 and is now this global giant that's taking over every single industry, right? But I would look at, as the chief marketing officer of this small tech startup that started 8 months ago, I would look at the Amazons who had been around since 1995, and I would say to myself, oh my gosh, why can't we just be like them? Or, you know, why aren't I as successful as them? And I think in this case of an influencer, it would be kind of like looking at Something Navy or Julia Engel and saying, why am I not as big or good as them? Well, they've been doing this for years and years and years every single day, and you started a month ago. And I think nothing has a way of driving the psyche toward competition much like focusing on the whole vision instead of just the next step. I've had this practice of setting goals for myself weekly since probably like early college. And I do it every single week, typically on Sundays. I'm like, okay, what is the intention of my week, if you will? And I used to set them all wrong. I used to set goals like, you know, I'm just going to give examples, but they probably were on there, like become a millionaire, quote, like get jacked. Or, you know, for you guys, it might be like get 1 million followers and, you know, these broad overarching goals, right? And then each week when I would review my goals, like say on Friday or Saturday night, I would just feel like a piece of crap because I wasn't even close. Not only was I not close, I wasn't even making progress because I wasn't breaking the goals down into their steps. I was focused on the vision instead of just the next step. And so a couple of years ago, I developed this new strategy for goal setting called the skyscraper exercise. And I now do this every Sunday, every single week. And I'm going to, full disclosure here, I'm not sure if this is someone else's. Like I read it and it inspired me somewhere. I can't remember. I tried to do a search online, but if someone figures out that this is actually someone else's idea, I'll give them full credit, but I couldn't find it. Until then, I'm just a genius who invented it. But what I do is I have one goal list for my big goals, my skyscraper goals. And so let's just apply this to the influencer world, for example. My skyscraper goal would be like work with Southwest Airlines, just as an example. So that's a skyscraper goal. That's what a big goal that I want to hit. And then I would carry that goal list with me everywhere I went each week. And then from that skyscraper goal list, I would create a weekly goal list. So I would look at my goals every Sunday, and then I'd start like breaking them down into steps. And the question that helped me break it down into steps is this question: how can I build a skyscraper in 7 days? I love this exercise because if my skyscraper goal is to work with Southwest Airlines, then my challenge is to figure out how to make a relationship and partnership with Southwest Airlines happen in 7 days' time. And now obviously that won't happen, so there's grace there. But what it does is it helps you to fight procrastination and helps you to prioritize the most important next step in your journey. So on my goal list, it would be things like post 5 travel pictures this week, or go to lunch with anyone I know remotely associated with Southwest Airlines. And you know, this skyscraper exercise has helped me to really prioritize, fight procrastination. And honestly, it's even helped me figure out who to hire to the Danny Austin team or the Sassy Club team, because this exercise, you know, usually ends up like, well, this has to be done, but I want to automate this task so that I can do this other task, which means I have to hire someone in position B, right? And so my point with all of this is that, you know, as you focus on the evolution of your progress, you stop focusing on the competitive nature to get there. And you start figuring out who you can collaborate with to hit your unique goals that oftentimes are very particular and personal to you. You know, you can take the path of competition, which just means it's going to take you a long time to get there. Or you can start collaborating with people and informing them of your skyscraper goals and seeing if they want to build a skyscraper with you. So step number 4 is short and sweet, similar, but it's called the retrospect exercise. So you've kind of figured out how to build a skyscraper, right? And, you know, big acknowledgement in struggling with collaboration over competition is that you're typically lacking the perspective that time plays in gaining experience. And so you feel nasty, or you feel jealous, or you feel angry. But the retrospect exercise is straightforward and simple. Basically, you just ask yourself, like, where was I exactly 1 year ago today? Like, seriously, where were you? If you're on Instagram, then you can scroll back to 1 year ago today. If you are on Facebook, you can use that little time hop app. If you aren't on either, I'm not really sure why you're listening to this podcast, but you can use your calendar. But think about, go back 1 year. Like, for example, if I go back 1 year, I think I did this with Danny on Stories just a couple days ago, but 3 years ago today, she was taking a picture in Punta Cana or something. And I remember we looked at it and we both laughed at it because it's like so funny how to us now, with our new level of quality and standard for our content, like how cool we thought that was at the time and how not cool it actually was, right? You know, it's just like it helps us track the evolution of how much has happened. In that case, it was 3 years, but like even in 1 year, I mean, how much have you grown? Like, think about the storms you've weathered, the evolutions that you've made. The truth of the retrospect exercise is that time is moving, and more likely than not, unless you're complacent, you're progressing. So just be patient. I decided to devote a whole other point to this time issue because I think that as millennials, we are very impatient by nature. And I think that what we need to understand as millennials is that success just legit takes a lot of time and a whole heck of a lot of perseverance as well. And so as Jay-Z said, which I don't know if he actually said this, but I saw it on Pinterest once, and I feel like it's just like one of those things where they just had a super generic motivational quote and they put Jay-Z's name on it. And he was like, well, I can't refute it. I might have said that. It's so generic. But that quote on Pinterest from Jay-Z, potentially, allegedly, says the most genius thing we did was we just didn't give up. So just be mindful of time and keep moving forward. So that brings us to step number 5 in retraining, reframing, rewiring our brains to adapt to collaboration over competition. Step number 5 is to embrace community. Now, this is probably my favorite point because I get to talk about one of my favorite studies that I've ever come across reading about. So, you know, the only true way I will say to embrace collaboration over competition is to embrace the value of community in your life. So honestly, the best way to be happy for other people is to be happy with other people. The most competitive people out there are probably, I'd say, the least empathetic. And because of that, they're probably also the most isolated. And to prove this last and final point, I want to talk about one of my favorite studies I've ever come across called the Harvard Study of Adult Development. So this study was an 80-year-old study that tracked 268 Harvard sophomores starting in 1938 during the Great Depression, and it followed them throughout their entire lives. And the study really had one key goal, and that was to discover clues on what it means to truly lead a happy and healthy life. So they study these people for 80 years. They check in with them periodically. And as a result of the study, the researchers were able to conclude that, quote, close relationships more than money or fame are what keep people happy throughout their lives. Those ties protect people from life's discontents. They help delay mental and physical decline and are better predictors of long and happy lives than social class, IQ, or even genes. That finding proved true across the board, end quote. Another couple of my favorite quotes from this study, Robert Waldinger, hope I said that right, from the study stated, quote, loneliness kills. It's as powerful as smoking or alcoholism. And then George Valiant from the study stated, quote, when the study began, nobody cared about empathy or attachment, but the key to healthy aging is relationships, relationships, relationships. I love this study so much because A, it's one of the longest, I think it is the longest term study done on the health and state of human happiness. You know, we're constantly fed by media and advertising and our parents, you know, what is it that's going to make us happy and stable and whole as individuals? But this actually tracked it from a scientific standpoint, and I just love it. And so it's one thing for me, I think, to say firsthand that money and followers won't make you happy, but it's another thing entirely for you to disagree with 80 years worth of research. And so collaboration over competition, people. Relationships, relationships, relationships. So now, you know, I hope that I've proven to you that both ACL and Instagram are not all that different, and mainly that collaboration over competition shouldn't be just a nice sentiment we say within this industry. It shouldn't be something that we just speak about at conferences, but something that is truly practiced daily. And I say that for the sake of the industry. I say it for the sake of the consumers of the content. I say it for the sake of our own mental health and heart health. I want to end on this. I want you to picture your Lizzo moment, okay? So you're at ACL, you're Lizzo. You step on stage, there are thousands of people in the audience. Now, you have two options when it comes to this vision. Those thousands in the audience can be thousands you stepped on, competed with, and leveraged to get there. Or those thousands can be thousands you collaborated with. They put you on that stage and they're so excited for you to be there. So I'll give you a hint. One crowd of those thousands will cheer for you much, much louder than the other. I hope that we can practice collaboration over competition. And I hope that you guys had a good time on this podcast. See you next week. Let's talk it over.